As you write your life story, you're far from finished. Are you looking to close the book on your job? Maybe turn a page in your career? Be continued at the Georgetown University School of Continuing Studies. Our professional master's degrees and certificates are designed to meet you where you are and take you where you want to go. At Georgetown SCS, the learning never stops, and neither do you. Write your next chapter. Be continued at scs.georgetown.edu/podcast.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
And I'm Jess, and you're listening to the Food Heaven Podcast,
your online resource for inclusive and accessible wellness.
Y'all, we have a great episode in store for you. Today, we are talking to the one, the only, Heather Kaplan, who is our friend and also a registered dietitian who has a virtual private practice that focuses on non-diet, weight-inclusive sports nutrition. You guys may remember her because she was on our episode titled Intuitive Eating for Athletes, where she talked all about how to make sure you are eating adequately and consistently if you are either training or just working out in general. And today we are going to talk with Heather about disordered eating. We're kind of backing up because we talk about disordered eating all the time, but realized we never actually defined what it actually is and figured that Heather would be the perfect person to talk to about this. So some of the things that we cover in this episode are, is calorie counting inherently a disordered practice? Also, what makes disordered eating different from an eating disorder? And for folks who may be worried about not getting enough protein or micronutrients, which is basically vitamins and minerals, is it okay to track your eating or is that disordered eating?
Yes. And this episode is based off of a DM exchange. And we were like, okay, yeah, this would be helpful information for everyone to know. So we're going to make it into an episode. A lot of you submitted questions for this episode. And so I also just want to provide some resources. I think some helpful episodes for some of the questions that were asked is BMI BS, which we did with dietitian Rebecca Scritchfield. Also, intuitive eating with a chronic condition. And the third one that I'm going to recommend is, can you practice intuitive eating and want to lose weight? Because there were a lot of questions related to these things, like, well, what if I want to lose weight? What if I have diabetes? A lot of different scenarios. And I feel like those will be some helpful listens. So before we dive in, I want to share a review. And this is from School Eeks, I think it's pronounced. As a registered dietitian, I am always looking for fun podcasts that I can learn from and I can share with my clients. Food Heaven is it. Thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for leaving that really thoughtful, short and sweet review. If you haven't already, you know the deal. We are almost at 2,000 reviews, y'all. So let's get there. Our goal is to get there by the summertime. So just take a few seconds, drop some stars. If you have time, drop a line, and we're going to get into it. Welcome back, Heather.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. So we were DMing because one of our followers has shared something with me and she kind of wanted some of my insight. And so I'm going to share that with our listeners so they have some context about what we're going to be talking about today. So it was like a graphic, or I don't know what it's called, but it was saying wanting to lose weight doesn't make you a bad person. Tracking your food or restricting your food in some way is not an eating disorder. Fat shaming is terrible. Diet shaming is no better. If you're happy with your body composition, great. Don't shame those that wish to change. So I was like, oh, okay. So I was like just sharing some of my thoughts around this. And then I had also included, also tracking your food and restricting can indeed be classified as disordered eating. And I was surprised because I feel like we have somewhat talked about this on the podcast, but a lot of people were messaging us about this. Some people were like, okay, I feel really triggered because like I do the calorie counting. I restrict for XYZ reasons, several reasons, not just like weight loss. Some people were saying like health reasons, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And they were like, I don't feel like I have disordered eating. And even some dietitians were like, this would not be classified as disordered eating. And I was like, okay. I was like, we should have a conversation about what disordered eating is because Jess and I are always talking about it, but I feel like we've never really gone into detail about what it is and what makes it different from eating disorders right. that are diagnosed or undiagnosed. And then I came across your article and I was like, oh yeah. I was like, let's bring Heather back on the podcast. So thank you for coming on.
So here we are. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. That's the backstory. So let's get into it. So let's talk about disordered eating, what it looks like in an everyday setting, and how it's different from eating disorders.
Yes. First, if it's okay, I just want to throw out a disclaimer, acknowledging like the stuff we're talking about today is going to look different for a lot of people, right? So, and we can talk about that and like what that means. So anything we talk about, like definitely not a replacement for one-on-one counseling, medical care, mental health care. You guys are nodding. I know you agree. Just like throwing that out there. As I was thinking about these questions, I'm like, well, I'm just going to like make sure people know that, that this is just for discussion. So we have disordered eating and then we have eating disorders. And those exist on a spectrum of eating patterns and behaviors, right? And they're definitely not the same thing. When I think about disordered eating, I think about three things primarily. I'm not going to say exclusively, but primarily I will think about, is this person preoccupied with food thoughts or food anxiety? Meaning like, is this something they think about all the time? Are they constantly thinking about what they ate before, what they're going to eat next, what they ate yesterday, what they can or can't eat? Just those like constant kind of inner monologues that we have about food. Is that a preoccupation that someone's having? Number one. Number two, are they eating more based on external factors versus internal factors? So like, we're all going to eat based on both of those in some way, right? Like an external factor for me is like, well, I want this thing for lunch, but I don't have it. So I'm going to have something else, right? But an external factor for someone else is like, do my calories add up? Do my macros add up? Like, did I have bread at my breakfast? Can I have bread for lunch? Like those kind of things that form rules in our head. So are they eating more based on external factors versus internal cues? And then number three, has their preoccupation with food and their rigidity or rules around food in some way negatively impacted their physical health or mental health or both? And I think the trouble is that disordered eating, as indicated by the responses you got from both clinicians and consumers, is subjective, right? We don't have like a really clear definition. You can look up some articles, and I did in preparation for this just to make sure that like I'm giving the right information. But a lot of them will say like there's a preoccupation with food. Even that is pretty subjective. How do we measure someone's preoccupation with food, right? Versus exactly. an eating disorder, which is a clinical diagnosis. And there are objective criteria for eating disorders. Now, are those great objective criteria? That's another conversation. but we have clinical eating disorders with a set of criteria that are diagnosed by medical professionals. And then we have disordered eating, which again is subjective, but I would kind of base it off of those three factors if I'm working with a client and thinking about what disordered eating means. And then we have the big issue, which is that disordered eating is so normalized that people aren't seeing it, which is what you saw in a lot of your comments, right? And like, is that true across the board that everyone who does these things has disordered eating? No, I think we couldn't generalize and say that. But because it's so normal to eliminate foods, to follow food rules, to fit yourself into a diet box, to track your food, to be concerned about your food, to plan out all your food, like all those things seem really normal because of diet culture. So we don't, like many folks don't see that as a disordered pattern of behaviors. The last thing I want to mention is that when we think about what disordered means, it is a condition or an illness that disrupts normal physical or mental functions. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's not necessarily quote unquote normal to be constantly thinking about food or constantly thinking about what you ate yesterday, what you're going to eat tomorrow, how to plan, how to balance, how to count, how to track. Like, those things are not things we need to constantly have in our head.
Going to pause really quick for this week's podcast sponsor, the one, the only Bragg Liquid Aminos. If you haven't heard about Bragg Liquid Aminos before, where have you been? Get up from under the rock. I've been using them for, I would say, lots of years now. And if you're not familiar, Bragg Liquid Aminos is a vegetable protein seasoning made from non-GMO verified soybeans. It is the original formula created by health pioneer Paul C. Bragg. My favorite way to use the liquid aminos is in my cooking, in my sauces, my marinades. I love making a stir fry, very basic. I just do like some frozen brown rice, some frozen veggies, some tofu, saute that up, add some sesame seed oil, and then some Bragg liquid aminos. Finish it off. So delicious. You can also use it for sauces, dressings, soups, marinades. Bragg liquid aminos are an excellent gourmet replacement for tamari, Worcestershire sauce, and soy sauces. If you're interested in giving them a try, head on over to bragg.com. That's BRAGG.com and use the code FOOD15 for 15% off your order. Again, that's bragg.com and get 15% off your order. Also, want to point out that they have launched a new line of apple cider vinegar. So if you love vinegar like I do, check that out as well. All right, back to the episode. I was just watching a YouTube show or it was Joe Rogan, YouTube interview Joe Rogan did.
Oh, Joe.
Yeah. And he had this guy, I can't remember his name, but he had this guy on talking about fitness. And I actually really liked what he had to say about fitness because he was basically saying most people like overtrain. We talked about this on the podcast and I was like, oh, this guy, you know, he knows what he's talking about. But then he started getting into nutrition and his personal stuff that he was doing. And he was like, well, I only eat between the hours of 10 and 6. And then if I'm doing something, I forget, like some days it's 10 and 3. And then if I'm going to go visit my mom and eat her food, then I don't eat for 24 hours. And I was like, click, like train this. Like, this is like, okay, here, yeah. Like you're done. Now I question everything you said about the other stuff. And to me, it's like very blatantly like, that is disordered eating. But I think there's so many people where it's like, no, that's not disordered eating. That works great for me. Like, how do you navigate that? Because I feel like a lot of times when I, you know, I'm dealing with clients or we're doing presentations and I'm like, everything is kind of disordered eating because it's so normalized. But people think I'm overreacting. So like, how do you deal with that in your practice? Like gently helping people realize why it's disordered.
Yeah. I mean, first I would say, like going back to kind of what you shared at the beginning too, Wendy, is like, are we trying to shame anyone? No, of course not. Of course not. We're just trying to say like, you don't have to constantly be thinking about this stuff. You don't have to constantly be watching the clock while you're eating and being like, well, I'm really hungry, but it's 3:02. So right. I guess I'm not eating anymore. Right? Like that's external overriding internal. And we don't want that. Like, I don't think that that's healthy for us and like mentally or physically. So I think that, again, it's sort of subjective. Like, I do think that as a clinician, like we have the tools to say like, this is a preoccupation with food that's impacting your mental and your physical health, either or both, and they're both important. Right. But for a client, like I might not directly say that right away. And I would definitely never invalidate how they feel. So if someone is saying to me, like, I don't eat for 24 hours after I eat with my mom because her food is blah, 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 I wouldn't be like, that's super crazy. You shouldn't be doing that. I know you wouldn't do that, right, Jess. I'm not saying you would. But
how dare you?
I might just be like, well, that's interesting. Why does that rule exist? How does that serve you? What's the purpose of that rule? How do you feel like that's healthy for you? You know, like just try to get curious about it. And for a lot of folks, like the problem is that no one has ever pointed out that this doesn't seem like it's serving them, or it doesn't seem like it's actually helping them in any way. And I don't want to say improving their health, because we don't have to only eat for the purpose of improving our health, right? Like we eat for so many different reasons, but I want to get curious about like, why does that behavior exist? How is it serving you? Where did it come from? Who told you to do it? Like who influenced this? Just to be curious instead of like immediately bringing my bias in, which is really tempting.
Yeah. It's so tempting. It's like,
you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
And then again, like for some people, they've just never thought to question it. Like maybe they heard this dude on Joe Rogan's show being like, I only eat from 10 to 3 or 10 to 6. And they're like, oh, I should only eat from 10 to 6. So then they might tell you, being like, I have this really healthy habit where I only eat from 10 to 6. And you're like, I'm sorry, what? And they're like, oh, is that not what? What's not normal about that, right? Like, it just takes someone else being like, that, are we sure that's helping or like right. serving you in any way? Or could we question it and get curious about it?
Okay, real quick follow-up.
Yeah.
So what he said, the reason that he did it, because I know people are going to have this question, is this is how I maintain my body composition and this works for me. What do you say in that situation?
Listen, you say it works for you. I'm not going to say it doesn't, but as a clinician, if it were my client, I would be curious about like, what is the value we're placing on that body composition? Hmm. What is the importance of that? Why is that more important to you than acknowledging that your body might be hungry outside of those hours or acknowledging that your body might have needs outside of those hours? And there could certainly be days where that's not true. Like there could 100% be days for that person where he's not hungry outside of the hours of 10 to 6. Who am I to say that he would be? Or to say like, oh, that's never true. I don't know. I don't know if that's true for him. But how does that rigidity otherwise impact your life? Mm. And does body composition take precedence over everything else that you value or that's important to you, or like any sort of flexibility in your life to like have social situations with food or family situations with food? Like, I think it sometimes takes someone else helping you step back and realize like, oh, I've actually missed out on birthday celebrations, or like, I feel a little on edge after 6 p.m. because I know I can't eat, or whatever might come up for that person. They've just never really thought about it, because in diet culture, we are taught and socialized or conditioned to say like body composition is important. So I'm doing all of this in the name of body composition, or insert whatever else comes to mind. And then it's justified and it feels normal. I mean, I don't know if you guys felt this way, but I certainly felt that way in my dietetics education. Like I had really disordered eating patterns. And then I'm like, well, see, my textbooks tell me that this is healthy. So it is. And I'm like, right. But I had to know that for myself, it wasn't, you know, like it was impacting my life. So you have to have that awareness, but sometimes it just helps to have someone point it out.
Yeah. I'm so happy we're having this conversation, because what you said, like with people feeling ashamed, I feel like, and that's why with Instagram, it's like, it usually goes real wrong.
I know.
So I was going to say it could go real right or real wrong. Cause I feel like people post these things and it's like, there's so much that I can say on Instagram, which was why I was like, okay, let's just have a conversation about it, because it's not black and white, especially with, you know, when it comes to stuff like disordered eating and even eating disorders, especially among Black and Brown people, and like just how hard it can be to diagnose. And so just talking about all these different scenarios. And I think because the calorie counting, especially, it's everywhere. It's like integrated into, you know, the Apple Watches and the Fitbits and like all of the apps and stuff. And like literally everyone does calorie counting. Jess and I have shared on the podcast, like we used to do that as well. And we didn't necessarily see any issue with it. And so I'm wondering if you can, in your experience, like with counseling people, Is there with intuitive eating, like, is there any room for calorie counting, or like, is it, yeah, is there any room? And then also, like, what are some ways that calorie counting can go left, or like it can become disordered?
Yeah. Yeah. So this would be another thing that like, hey, I was doing this in college and then my textbooks told me it's a healthy behavior. So I just kept doing it, yeah. Even though I could recognize for myself, like this is impacting how I eat and when I eat and what I eat. And it's not serving me, right? It is negatively impacting my mental and physical health. So I think that like, is calorie counting in alignment with intuitive eating? I would say no. I mean, we'll have to like confirm with Evelyn and Elise. I'm going to guess they would also say no. Just going to go out on a limb here. Because again, that's an external factor overriding an internal factor. I think the nuance in that conversation is why someone is calorie counting, or why they're tracking in general. Is it something they do every day? Is it a tool for restriction? Is it a tool for control? Is it a tool for safety or comfort? Or have they had experiences in the past where they haven't eaten enough, and this is one thing they use right now to help them eat enough, right? So like, could that be something that someone does in conjunction with some non-diet intuitive eating practices with support and guidance? I think yes. that's a really complex case, right? Like that's not going to be everyone, but I do think that if that's something you're using as a tool in combination with other things and support to help you really eat adequately and actually like move away from a diet mentality, like who am I to say that that's wrong for you? Is it something you should be doing all the time, every day, long-term, every meal, every snack? No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Right? More often than not, what people are using calorie counting for is to quote unquote eat healthy, which means not enough, which means to not gain weight, which means to stay in my powerful diet culture bubble, right? Again, is that true for everyone? Probably not, but I just think way more often than not, calorie counting is a tool that's used for restriction. And then there might be some people who say, well, it helps me eat enough of a certain macronutrient. That's probably more like macro counting or whatever, right? And it's like, but why do you think you need this tool to help you do that? Because we lean on it like a crutch, you know, like we can't ever fully tune into internal cues or even just like our mental ability to nourish ourselves, like hunger, fullness, set aside. Like we have the ability to nourish ourselves with the right access to food, right? If we have these other tools that we lean on, we start to lean heavier and heavier on them because we think that we need them and we don't know how to function without them. You know, and I think that for most people, like that's just not going to be a long-term solution. And I have yet to meet someone, this is totally anecdotal evidence, I've yet to meet someone who hasn't used calorie counting to restrict in some way.
Yeah. And when Wendy said we saw nothing wrong with it, for me, it was at the time.
Yeah.
Looking back, yeah. Absolutely. Like it was a hot mess. Yeah. For many reasons, and I don't want to get into those. But yeah, I agree with you. I think in some instances, for certain clients, the only reason where I might do a calorie count on my own, kind of with them, and then share it with them is when I suspect they're under eating. Just to be like, hey, what did you eat? Okay, let me do this. Okay, you're under where you probably should be. How can we make sure we get more? Never is a way to like cut people back from food.
Right.
It's really just to help illustrate like we need to make sure that you're eating more consistently and more at your meals.
Right.
You kind of already touched on the next question from that we got from a listener, and that was, you know, if they're trying to make sure they're getting enough protein. I do have some clients who are vegan, so this can be a concern for them. And also micronutrients. A lot of Black people are vitamin D deficient. Is it okay to track food for this? You kind of touched on it already, but like,
yeah.
How would you sum it up?
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't want to say there's any like black and white answer to this stuff because we try to exist in that gray area in non-diet work, right? So if someone says, I'm tracking my macros to eat enough protein, like vegan or not vegan, or I'm tracking my macros and my micros to see if I'm getting enough calcium or enough vitamin D or enough iron, one, do we need to do that every day? Two, do we need to do it long-term? Three, like what makes you think you're not getting enough, right? And has tracking been helpful for you? So like if it has been helpful, that's a helpful tool, but do we need to do it every day for the rest of our lives to make sure we eat enough? No, but the longer we do it, the longer we lean on that tool, on that external cue, and we forget that we have the ability, like with support and guidance and practice, to nourish ourselves with access, right? So like for someone who says like, well, I don't get enough protein unless I track it. I would have a lot of questions about that. Like, yeah. Well, how long have you been tracking it? Have you tried not tracking it? Like they think they need, or they do need maybe in that moment, that external feedback of like, oh, you've gotten however many grams of protein today. And they're like, okay, check the box. And there are some people who do really function well on data, right? Like I'm not really one of those people, but there's some people who just, they're data people, they're numbers people, they're information people. Like that's how they process and work and thrive and whatever. And so they've probably just like, again, leaned heavier and heavier onto that tool and then think like without the tool, I wouldn't be able to do this, which I think is a bigger conversation that a lot of these external cues, external rules, external behaviors teach us over time that we can't trust ourselves, that we don't have those abilities to nourish ourselves. And then we start to believe that, you know, like it's sort of like any social media app, like we start to believe like I can't function without this. You did at one time. You did, right? The other thing that I'll add just about calorie counting and tracking in this way, whatever you're tracking for, is that I think a lot of it is done under the assumption that we're robots and we just like need the exact same things every day.
Yes.
Even though like intellectually, I would argue most people know that's not true, but then they like, their calorie intake might vary a couple hundred one day from the next. And they're like, it's too much, you know, but like, maybe that's just what you needed that day. Or maybe like your protein intake doesn't have to be exactly the same every day. Your vitamin D intake doesn't have to be exactly the same every day. But these tools like function in a way that's like, here, robot human, like, let me tell you exactly what you need. And if you like get the right amount, you'll have a green light or a gold star or a ribbon or whatever. And then you feel good. And we move on,
yeah.
You know, and that's just like not how any of us function. We're not robots.
Hey there, let's talk sleep. According to the CDC, 1 in 3 adults in the U.S. don't get enough sleep, and our friends at Pachamama want to change that. You've heard of CBD, I'm sure. And if you're a listener of this show, you're familiar with Pachamama CBD products. But have you heard of CBN? It's a lesser-known non-psychoactive sleep cannabinoid. Pachamama has just launched their Sleep Well Gummies, sleep, wellness, and immunity all in one delicious gummy. The all-natural bedtime supplement is formulated with a unique blend of CBD, CBN, and melatonin for a better night's sleep, plus elderberry extract to support the immune system. CBD and CBN are pretty much a match made in heaven. When they're paired together, these two compounds can create a powerful and relaxing sleep aid that's 100% THC-free, so you don't have to worry about getting high. Elderberry has been used for thousands of years to support the immune system. All these ingredients work together to support the body's circadian rhythm and whole body health. You can rest easy knowing Pachamama Sleep Well Gummies are also triple lab tested and clean label Project Purity awarded. You can get 25% off your Pachamama order using the code FOODHEAVEN. You could go to PachamamaCBD.com, that's PachamamaCBD.com, and the code is going to be FOODHEAVEN for 25% off a better night's sleep. Let's talk about meal plans, because I feel like that's another hot topic. It's like to meal plan or not to meal plan, to meal prep or not to meal prep. Does that fall in line with, you know, because I do feel like I think meal planning can be helpful. However, it can go real left too, where it's like I have to eat these foods like every single day and I have to make sure I include this. And it could become very robotic and like just like another way to control food intake. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I think the question first is like, are we meal planning or is this a meal plan? Because those are two different things, right?
Yeah.
And then there's some like in between. So I use a form of meal plan for eating disorder clients to make sure they're eating enough. So I will try to introduce some structure and some consistency and frequency with food intake. So that will feel like a meal plan and that has a purpose and is sometimes needed to help folks through certain stages of eating disorder treatment or even disordered eating treatment where we're just trying to get back to some consistency. We're trying to communicate to the body like resources are available and I'm consuming them and you're safe and it's okay. Versus like meal planning is like on Saturday afternoon, I open a few cookbooks and I pick out some recipes, right? And whether or not that aligns with intuitive eating, I think it's fuzzy for people because we oversimplify intuitive eating and we say, oh, but it's eating whatever I want, whenever I want. So I have to be more spontaneous and impulsive and I have to just wait for the moment to decide what to eat. But then you don't have what you want to eat. So then you just may not eat or you may have to like go out of your way to go get something. So I definitely think meal planning can be really helpful for folks, like to make sure that you have food around so that you can feed yourself throughout the week. And like, there are plenty of times where I pick out a recipe over the weekend, buy all the things for it. And then I'm like on Wednesday night, that's just not what I want to eat. Sometimes I'll make it anyway, because we got to be practical. And sometimes I won't because it just really sounds that bad. I'll like do something else. So I think, you know, this is also a gray area. Like it's not a yes or no question necessarily. There's going to be times where meal planning can be really helpful. And I think it's a good thing to do overall if you find that you're eating at home a lot, which most of us are right now. But like, do we always have to eat on a meal plan? No. Is it a tool that could be helpful? Yeah. But again, doesn't have to be a long-term forever thing.
I, for me, think meal planning can be very helpful just because when you get, when I get hungry, it's done.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, what do I want? Like, oh, and yes, think about it before, sure. But when you're busy, it's like real world. So yes, I loved meal planning. Having said that, because of the pandemic, I just haven't been, I know a lot of my clients too, like I have not meal planned like up until 2 weeks ago, like for over a year.
Yeah.
And just been kind of like, what, you know, like frozen meals, sun basket, like whatever. So yeah. I also think that just being able to have that flexibility too, where it's like, yeah, this helps me, but like, I'm just not there right now. And like, that's fine, you know?
Totally. Yeah. That's definitely a skill I got burned out with. And to be honest, in our house, like my partner does a lot of that. Like,
nice.
Cause he gets annoyed if we shop and we don't have a meal plan. And I'm just like, yesterday I did our grocery shopping and I was like, I'm just going to get the basics. And he's like, no, pick out a few recipes or like, I will pick them out, but do not just get the basics because then we have nothing to cook. And like, we have kids, like we kind of have to be, we're already like mentally tapped out. So to at least just be like, this was the thing we said we were making for dinner. Like, does it sound that great? No, but it's the thing we were going to make. So like, let's just take one thing off of our minds and just like stick to the basics.
Yeah. Also yeah. like just having some staples that you can easily like quesadillas, sandwiches.
Yeah. Easy stuff. Frozen things. Yeah. We always have frozen.
I think
pizza.
Also like flexibility is really important because there might be times where it makes sense to have more of a plan, especially if you have a million things going on. And
right.
then, you know, because not everyone has like the luxury of just winging it. Like when I was working mm-hmm. 9 to 5 and I had to commute, there was no way. Like I had to plan, you know, ahead of the week because I was working long hours. And so for some people, it just makes more sense. But I think it's always important to keep in mind like your sanity. Like how yeah. much are you thinking about this and how much space is this occupying in your mind, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And like, does that meal plan, like say you only plan for dinners, because I feel like that's most of the things that people will plan for throughout the week, right? Like I picked out all my dinners, I'll figure out breakfast and lunch. Is that dinner plan affecting the way you eat earlier in the day? Does it change what you have for lunch, what you have for breakfast, what you allow yourself to have for a snack? Like that's where we get curious and we dig in a little bit, right? Like, is that preoccupation coming back in? Is that kind of rigidity coming back in? Is it influencing what you allow yourself to eat at other times of day? Then like, maybe that tool's not serving you right now, or we need right. to like try to be more flexible with it.
Agree. So the next question is about weight. So we had a lot of people who asked questions about weight loss for medical conditions. This person in particular said, I recognize our culture is obsessed with weight loss, but I also recognize that losing a few pounds has helped my diabetes and I feel conflicted.
We're not here to say it didn't help, right? It sounds like it did. So maybe it did. The problem with weight in our culture is that we isolate it as the thing that helped. But weight loss or gain or maintenance does not happen in a vacuum. It didn't just happen, right? Like there were certain behaviors that led up to that. And there are also a set of behaviors that are going to impact each body differently. So whatever that person did to lose weight, I could do and my weight might not change at all. Or I might gain weight or I might lose weight. Maybe I won't lose as much. Maybe I'll lose more. Like we're all different. So I think the problem with this mentality is like, one, we are never trying to invalidate that something was helpful for someone or that it felt good to them or that it was what they wanted or needed. Like that is all you. That's great. But it wasn't weight loss that improved the condition. Weight loss is not a behavior. There are behaviors that influence our weight. So even when we look at diabetes, right, or type 2 diabetes specifically, there's always this weight-centric healthcare norm, lose X percent of your body weight and it will help improve your risk. I don't doubt that that has been pulled out of research, but what drives me nuts is like people didn't just happen to lose weight. Like what were they doing differently? Like was their stress different? Were their medications different? Was their movement patterns different? Was their access to food different? Were their food patterns different? Like what happened for that to happen, right? Because we can't guarantee that everybody is going to respond the same way to a set of behaviors, but we can look at behaviors and say for each person, all of whom are individual human beings, this set of behaviors seem to really improve symptoms or help manage disease symptoms or improve disease risk. So let's look at that set of behaviors and let's talk about that instead of just the way that it impacted weight. But because the main message is the way that it impacted weight, we know we're looking at research with an anti-fat bias.
Yeah, because I think it's important to honor individual experiences. Like, we don't want to invalidate anyone's experience or like what they're doing, but we also have come across a significant amount of research showing that restriction for weight loss is not sustainable and that it can lead to weight gain. So I would also question, like, it's great that you're feeling good, but also like, let's look at the bigger picture and like, what has your experience been in the past with your current eating habits? Like, have they worked out? Has it compromised like your quality of life?
Right.
You know, like all those things are also really important to consider because like ultimately we want our clients to thrive and be happy and not be so obsessed with like all of these food thoughts that can really impact how you live in the world and the right. experiences that you have.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times when you're talking to folks who have that lived experience of like, I changed this and I track this and I do this differently every day for my movement and I feel so much better. And I'm like, I have no doubt that you do. I do think that's true because you're telling me it's true. So I believe you. But is that going to feel the same way 2 or 3 years from now? Are you still going to want to be tracking your food? Like in this exact little bubble of a moment, it doesn't feel restrictive. It doesn't feel disordered. It doesn't feel like it's not like a burden to you to be tracking or to be constantly doing this thing. But we don't know how we're going to feel in a few months or a few years. And you might feel the same, but I just want to open up a space for that to not be true, right? Like we don't know for sure. And then again, just like, can we zoom out a little bit or step back a little bit and say like, actually, is this impacting like other things I do that also serve me? And how much or how little? And does that matter? Like, is that of importance to that person?
Absolutely. I'm wondering for people who have loved ones who, you know, like whether they're sharing meals or they're like sharing about the foods that they eat, because I feel like that's also really normalized too, to like share the latest diet or like, this is the way I'm eating. Even among my friends, like yeah. they pretty much know where I stand with these things. And it's like, oh my God, I'm like, did y'all forget? Because they're constantly talking about like, oh, well, don't eat that. You got to cut this out. You got to do this.
Yeah.
And it's so exhausting. And one listener shared that her partner might potentially have an eating disorder. And they wanted to know, like, how can you support loved ones who you suspect have disordered eating patterns or eating disorder?
Yeah, I think it's really, really hard. And I'm always curious for like, for that person, does it impact you too? Because that's also yeah. important, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've been in that situation. I know what that feels like. It can be really triggering. It can be frustrating. You can kind of be oversensitive to it because of your own experiences. And you're like, can you just stop? Because like, yeah. it's impacting me too. But at the root of that, there is a concern for the other person because they probably have recognized like, I've been in that space and I know it wasn't good for me. And so we are projecting a little bit, right? But maybe that's not how you feel. And maybe you're just noticing like my partner is, or someone I love or someone in my life is definitely like exhibiting some disordered eating patterns or maybe an eating disorder symptom or signs or whatever. I don't think there's one right way to approach it. But what I have heard over and over again, and what I also like share with folks is like, just don't accuse or diagnose. You know, our perception of their behaviors is one thing. Their perception is just as valid. And we want to like be able to hear that, you know, and they might feel really differently about it. And that might also be coming from an eating disorder or from a disordered place. And so they're just not ready to hear this message, which I think is true for a lot of people. So I think like approach it very gently and carefully and in a way that you are just checking in with that person instead of being like, hey, I think you have an eating disorder, or hey, I think you have disordered eating. Because that kind of puts them on the defensive, right? And they're like, what evidence do you have? Or like, what makes you say that? Or how dare you? Or whatever. Like, people are all going to respond differently. But I think if you come in gently, like checking in with that person and saying like, hey, maybe giving an example, like I noticed that you said you were hungry last night, but you didn't eat anything and you went to bed hungry and you didn't sleep well. And like, are you okay? Like, what would have been the problem with having a snack? Or like, why do you feel like you did that? And is there something you want to talk about? Is there something I can like be a shoulder to lean on or an ear to listen or whatever? Yeah. I think just coming in, like checking in with them, holding space for them to talk about it if they want to, and also being really ready for them to not want to talk about it, because if it is an eating disorder or severe disordered eating, like, they're not going to be in a place right in that moment when you approach them that they're ready to open up. But maybe that tells them that you're concerned. So maybe in a week or a month or so, they might be like, you know, I do think that this is kind of an issue, and I know I can go back to that person and talk to them about it.
Yeah. And I think just because everything is so normalized with social media that,
right,
and with these like biohacker dudes, every like these tech guys where it's, yeah, like every single guy I know is on intermittent fasting and it's just like very normal.
Yeah.
It's tough because people, yeah, it's like, what do you mean? Like,
they look at you like, girl,
yeah,
you're bugging.
The CEO of Twitter only eats one meal a day. Like, how am I wrong for eating between 10 and 3?
Right.
So it can be really tricky, but also triggering once people do find their own healing and then they're surrounded by this. And so I like the language. But also, you know, if you are someone who does have these people in your life, I think it's important for you to get your own support too and have people maybe who are like-minded, or whether it's joining a support group or just something, so you have a safe space to like process what you're going through. And
yeah,
if you are triggered, to kind of connect with other folks who are on the same page and who aren't making you feel like there's something wrong with you for noticing a potential issue in someone close to you. So just want to put that out there.
And you also have the right to be like, I don't want to talk about this. Because, right, I think like for a lot, right, of people, these are conversations that are constantly coming up. And if it's triggering for you or it's just like exhausting, like, you don't have to be a support system for anyone. Like, you can still love them and be there for them, but not in that way to like listen to them talk about these things.
Right. Yeah. I was just going to add, like, if that person does sort of deflect, like the CEO of Twitter does this, or this tech guy does this, or this guy on Joe Rogan said this, like, okay, those are all different people. I'm concerned about you. Like, is this working for you? You know, because I, right, like, clients do that too in session. They'll deflect to someone else in their life, or someone who told them, or someone who did this, or someone they saw on Instagram, or professional athlete they follow. I'm like, that's great for all those people. I don't know the big picture for all those people.
Exactly.
I'm working with you, you know, like, let's bring it back to you.
Right. And it's like, something about your eating is troublesome to you because of the fact that you decided to sign up with me or you or whoever it is who works with disordered eating. So there's something there that you're finding trouble with. So let's like dive into that.
Yeah.
Well, Heather, thank you for joining us again. Another great conversation. For people who are wanting to learn more about your work and WIND and all the amazing things you're doing, and also your Instagram, which is always has the hot takes, where can they find you?
So many hot takes. You can find me on the RD Real Talk podcast for more of conversations like this at RD Real Talk on Instagram. And then if you're a practitioner, we are the Weight Inclusive Nutrition and Dietetics group on Facebook. So come on in, come join us. Conversations like this happening all the time, just trying to help each other learn and unlearn and like keep digging into weight inclusive practices.
Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Food Heaven podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to connect with us online. We're most active on the gram at Food Heaven, but we're also on Facebook and Twitter at Food Heaven Show. If you like this podcast, make sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share with a friend.
Yep, our podcast is released every Wednesday, and each week we take a deep dive into topics like health at every size, food and culture, intuitive eating, mental health, and body acceptance. If you're looking for a sustainable and inclusive path to wellness, come hang out with us to learn how to take care of yourself from the inside out. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.